Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, everybody. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for the hour, the person you just heard on the previous Fun Drive PSA telling you to donate to CJSF 90.1 FM for this week of Fun Drive, where we are asking for your generous donations, dear listener. Those who tune into CJSF regularly, those who appreciate community radio, those who want us to continue to grow and reach new heights. So with that being said, as this is a Speak Up episode, there is still going to be a lot of talk content. It's not going to be just me talking about Fun Drive, even though that is so incredibly important. And for this episode, I just wanted to focus on some of the pieces over the past year that I have really, really been proud of making and that I think would be fun to talk about in a bit of a retrospective. So that will be sort of the format of this very special Fun Drive episode of Speak Up, the Tuesday Speak Up specifically. And before I get into any of that, I'm going to be playing a little bit of music. I'm going to be playing a Vancouver artist who has been getting a lot of play on CJSF the past few months. This is Jan with I Deserve Better. Once again, this is Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Make sure you stay tuned. It's going to be a pretty fantastic Fun Drive episode of Speak Up.
Drinking in Paris, you say that you miss me and that
inspired some new lines that you wrote and how we used to make jokes. And I say that I miss you too, but I already know that by morning this whole thing will all be revoked. And you'll say that it didn't convey how you'd hoped. At the edge of my bed, at the end of my rope, I won't bother to tell you. I think that you know that I deserved better, didn't I? Deny, it's not that you're such a bad guy. It's that I deserved better that time.
Once again, that was Jan with I Deserve Better. Once again, you are listening to Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are at the point in the hour, one of the many points in the hour, where I am going to make a pledge for your so generous donation, dear listener, because if you are a regular, or if you are a regular listener of Speak Up or any of the other amazing programming here at CJSF, you understand the importance of community radio and having a space for a diverse array of voices and perspectives and experiences coming together and creating community radio. You know, one thing I like to say to people that first start volunteering here is that I feel like community radio, in a way, is a space that's not afraid of failure. And that's a really beautiful thing to me. I think there's a lot of fear when it comes to failure these days, and not just these days, but I think just historically, fear or failure is something that people try to shy away from. And I think that really sucks, because I think a lot of beautiful things can come from failure. And I think it really is beneficial to have spaces where people can try things out and tinker away and sort of find their voice in a way that is still public, in a way that is still being shared by a wide audience of people. I think that's important so that people, you know, not only are able to express themselves in a way that can be heard, but also it keeps people, you know, accountable to the audiences that are listening to them. And I really love community radio for that reason, and I hope you do too. So if you would like to donate to this very special Fun Drive episode of the Tuesday Speak Up, you can go to cjsffundrive.ca. That is cjsffundrive.ca or cjsf.ca/donate, and put towards a generous donation towards this Speak Up show. There'll be a drop down list of shows to donate to, and you can donate to Speak Up specifically, or whichever show happens to be your favorite. That could be a $35 donation. Maybe you got $50 lying around and you want to give that towards the station. Any amount of money goes a long way. So if you want to donate online, you can do that. If you want to text or call us for a donation, you can call us at 778-782-2573. That is 778-782-2573. Thank you so much. Every little bit counts, and it is so unbelievably appreciated, and it helps us continue to provide the programming that we provide. And it also helps us reach further in the sense that we're able to get more voices and more perspectives and more people here at CJSF, because that's what we always strive to do. So thank you once again. So earlier I had mentioned that this episode is going to be a bit of a retrospective over the past year, and that is because I started working here full-time at CJSF about a year ago as the sort of in-house journalist slash reporter here at the station. And I have just been so eternally grateful for the opportunities it's provided me and just the amount of people that I've been able to speak to and the amount of events and things going on throughout the community, whether that be in Burnaby, whether that be in New Westminster, whether that be in North Vancouver, which is actually where I grew up. So I've had a lot of fun doing stories there as well. I have just felt so honored to be able to share news with all of you. And recently, couple months ago, back in September, the First People's Gathering House at SFU opened up, and I was able to attend the opening and speak with some of the people involved with the creation of the First People's Gathering House, and I thought I would share that because that's a piece that I'm particularly proud of, and if you haven't heard it, now you can. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On September 12th, the First People's Gathering House on Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus opened its doors to the public. First announced in September of 2020, the First People's Gathering House has been discussed as a ceremonial longhouse that will serve to celebrate Indigenous knowledge and culture at SFU. The Gathering House represents the four host nations whose unceded traditional lands SFU Burnaby was built on. The Musqueam Nation, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, the Squamish Nation, and the Coquitlam Nation. Before the opening ceremony, CJSF was able to get an inside look of the First People's Gathering House, where we spent time in the building's Great Hall. The space has very intentionally been wrapped inside and out with cedar, a traditional longhouse building material. While looking through the space, we were able to speak with Alden Yellowhorn, an SFU professor with the Department of Indigenous Studies and a member of the building committee for the First People's Gathering House. While the plans for this building are only several years old, according to Yellowhorn, its creation has been talked about since his time at SFU in the 1990s.
Prior to this, the Indigenous community didn't really have much of a footprint here on campus. And this building really stands in stark contrast to that brutalist style of architecture that was, you know, very part of Arthur Erickson's design. And this creates kind of an architectural dialogue between the very organic ideas of this space and concrete and edged corners of the rest of the university.
Yellowhorn then went on to describe more of the architectural intentions of the First People's Gathering House.
The way we designed the place with the architect, you know, taking the traditional or the vernacular architecture of local First Nations and using that as the template for creating the physical structure so that even somebody walking past here, it takes like 2 minutes to walk past here, but they'll learn something about First Nations people in that time. So we designed it. Everything is designed to highlight the local culture from the interior design, but also the landscape. We used native plants to do the landscaping and kind of really emphasizing local area, the local area and what it means, like the place Lukluk-Waitin, the place of arbutus trees. And so we're looking, even if you look at the outside of the building, it's designed to look like arbutus trees, the bark of arbutus trees, you know, and as the building ages, it'll take on that resemblance more.
Lastly, we asked Alden Yellowhorn what the community response and interest have been so far for the First People's Gathering House.
Oh, well, we've already had a lot of interest in the space, you know, for people wanting to hold special classes, to invite guest speakers who are coming to SFU, but also to hold special gatherings for their departments. So we're just waiting until after the opening is done, and then we'll start taking bookings. And by then, we'll have a fee structure on how much we'll be charging for the use of the space and whatnot.
In the Great Hall of the First People's Gathering House, there are four house posts that have been carved by a member of each of the four host nations. Before the opening, we had the opportunity to speak with Lyle Sparrow, a carver from the Musqueam Nation, who shared with us the personal meaning of the house post that he carved and what it depicts.
When the Kamloops thing came out, given our past history on the boarding schools, I just wanted to honor the ones that were left and never found. So that's the meaning behind the pole, is Mother Earth on the bottom, giving, passing the young ones up to grandfather and freeing them. I don't know, there's just a lot of bad history about it, and my parents went through it, and it wasn't until later years that I found out, you know, what had happened to them. And, you know, sort of had me in a mode of thinking of, you know, like the other people across this country that went through the, you know, similar things. And, you know, just to honor them and, you know, give some healing to the ones that are still here and free the ones that are not. And, you know, thanks to Kamloops, it's worldwide. You know, it's not something that you can dismiss anymore and say, no, it never happened. It happened, and, you know, like I said, I'm kind of proud of my parents, too, where they never really brought it up about what really happened to them in the boarding schools. But when I learned what did happen, it sort of hurts the heart.
Lyle Sparrow then went on to explain his personal experience carving this house post and some of what it brought up for him.
I mean, there were some days where it was hard, you know, because my mind is, you know, with the pole, what I was doing. And then, but at the same time, thinking back on, you know, different things that came to light as I was growing up. You know, so like I said, there were hard days and there were good days.
Later in the day, the public opening ceremony began, which included opening words from local indigenous elders from the Squamish and Musqueam Nations, as well as various song and dance performances, including from the Red Tail Spirit Singers. Now that the First People's Gathering House at the SFU Burnaby campus has opened, it will be available to pre-invited guests from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday to Friday. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. All right, once again, that was my piece on the First People's Gathering House opening here at SFU. Thank you to Eldon Yellowhorn and Lyle Sparrow for sharing your perspectives and your experiences and agreeing to speak with me and recording it. I, you know, that's another thing I feel like I'm really grateful for, is that people are willing to share their voices and their experiences on air. And I kind of just feel like the person with the microphone sometimes that allows for that. So thank you. It really, really, truly means so unbelievably much. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before I get into the next segment of the hour, I again want to reiterate that it is Fun Drive here at CJSF 90.1 FM. And for that reason, if you enjoy local news, if you enjoy grassroots reporting and community-minded coverage, then you should donate to CJSF. You can go to cjsf.ca/donate and put some money towards this show, because it goes towards the station. You know, another amazing thing about community radio is that all the people here, no one is in community radio because it is making them rich. No one is in community radio because that there is some lucrative opportunity awaiting them. People are in community radio because they love it, because they love doing what they do. They love making a show. They love putting together audio pieces or fun interviews, and they love sharing it with all of you. So for that reason, please consider donating to cjsf.ca/donate, or you can call us at 778-782-2573, or you can also text the word donate to 778-782-2573, and you will get set up with a donation link. Once again, thank you all so much for your time and your generous donations. Coming up next, we have another piece that I'm quite proud of. This one was with the West Vancouver Streamkeepers. This was all the way back in March of this year, and it had to do with the fact that in October 2024, there was a pretty significant atmospheric river event that caused a lot of flooding throughout the Lower Mainland, and specifically within North Vancouver and West Vancouver. And, you know, at the time, they thought that this may be a detriment to local salmon populations, but then it was found that the just sort of reset that the creeks got from the atmospheric river actually ended up proving to be a benefit for local salmon populations, which I thought was really interesting. One reason I really love this piece, and one reason why I really love doing what I do, is that I was able to, you know, sometimes when you need to get an interview done, you just meet up online, and, you know, that's convenient. That's great. I've done a lot of amazing interviews that way. But for this interview specifically, I was able to go down to West Vancouver to the specific creek that was being discussed. And you can hear that all throughout the piece. So being able to like walk through the area and really feel what is being talked about is something that is really cool. And I hope that comes across in this interview, because you can hear the creek pretty much all throughout. All right. Once again, thank you all so very much for your generous ears and donations. Here is my interview.
Reporting from West Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. In October of 2024, the Lower Mainland experienced an atmospheric river, a long, narrow section in the atmosphere that transports water vapor outside of the tropics. The severity of this atmospheric river resulted in significant precipitation levels, infrastructure damage from flooding, and, according to findings from the West Vancouver Streamkeeper Society, historically high counts for local salmon populations. On February 24, 2025, the organization presented findings from their yearly salmon count at West Vancouver City Council, where they stated that the atmospheric river event in October had actually proven to be a benefit for local salmon populations. To learn more about these findings, CJSF met with Leslie Pomeroy, a lead volunteer for the West Vancouver Streamkeeper Society, who is also responsible for the organization's. We spoke at Brothers Creek in West Vancouver, where these high salmon counts were first observed.
It was really interesting. So I don't know if you remember, but the atmospheric river happened on voting day. And I was out helping with a campaign, and I was with somebody who's actually an MP in West Vancouver, and she was getting all these texts of floods, massive floods. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was down 21st and 25th. There were just rivers. And then Marine Drive was underwater. A bunch of businesses were damaged. And I had a survey. My team was supposed to go out on the Sunday. And the girls were wondering if we should cancel. And I said, no, we're not canceling. This is an amazing opportunity to see the effects, the firsthand effects of climate change on our creeks. So I was basically preparing it to be a lesson in, yeah, the devastation of climate change. I sort of prefaced it with, we're not going to see any fish, but we can see what has happened to the creeks as a result of the really extraordinarily high water levels. And sure enough, we did see a lot of, there was a bit of erosion, not a ton, but just, you know, the water had to find new channels down the creek and things like that. And we did several, we have five zones, and we got to here, this was our final zone, and we actually saw three chum in the creek. And the water was still running incredibly fast. I don't know how they stayed in the creek or if they somehow got back up the following day. But it was, we'd had quite a few fish prior to then. The fish numbers dropped dramatically after the atmospheric river, but within, you know, a week, they were way high. So I would say that the main benefit for salmon was just the high water levels. It makes it so much easier to move up the creek. And we've had, I mean, as you know, we've had several years of drought for Vancouver. Yeah, when the water levels are high, I mean, you can see over here where you've got lots of rock. If you don't have a lot of water, they simply can't move up the creek.
Pomeroy also spoke about the initial surprise that came from the salmon count due to the negative human effects of the atmospheric river.
Because we view the atmospheric river from a very human point of view, which is like, oh, there's so much water, it's going to be hard to get up the creek. But it, in fact, is a completely different experience for the salmon. I think we were also really surprised because the chum predictions were extremely low. Like, they thought we were going to have a very bad year for chum, and we ended up having a huge year. And within the first week we saw fish, second week we only saw three, but then the next week people just started reporting massive numbers of fish in the creeks. So yes, it was surprising. What was also surprising was that, human devastation aside, it proved to be a wonderful refresh for the creek. Because we've had so many years of relatively low water flow, so you don't get a lot of redistribution of gravel. Erosion is actually kind of good for the creeks because it gets gravel in to the creeks, and that's the ideal spawning material for the salmon. Yeah, and that was unanticipated by us, but of course, in retrospect, makes perfect sense.
Lastly, Leslie Pomeroy talked about what people should do if they want to become more involved with their local creeks and ecosystems.
What I love about the streams is they give you an insight to one aspect of the environment, but one that affects everything around it and is affected by everything around it. So, yeah, if we have healthy streams, it's likely to be reflective of a healthier environment, which I'm sure even if human beings don't care about salmon and don't care about streams, they probably care about, you know, the health of their own environment. Yeah, that's another thing. And West Vancouver Stream Keepers is a great organization. We have a website that I would encourage anybody who's interested in going and having a look at, but also look into streamkeeping organizations in your own neighborhoods. Always looking for volunteers. I'm pretty certain all of them are always looking for volunteers. And yeah, there's lots of opportunity to get out and get in the creeks and enjoy nature.
Once again, that was Leslie Pomeroy of the West Vancouver Stream Keepers Society. All right. Once again, we are back with Speak Up Only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That, again, was my interview with Leslie Pomeroy of the West Vancouver Stream Keepers. And again, just a piece that I am so, so very grateful and happy that it was able to come to fruition in the way that it did. And if you want to keep supporting not just community radio, but community journalism, local journalism, hyper-local stories within your community, donate to CJSF for this week of fund drive, whether that be, again, $35, $50, $70, maybe you got 100 whole dollars lying around and you want to contribute to a community organization that works towards providing a unique array of perspectives and voices and opinions in a way that not a lot of other places, if any, are going to be able to provide you in the same way. So go to cjsf.ca/donate and donate towards Speak Up
only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And coming up next, another piece we've got happened, which happened earlier this year, back in February of 2025. This was a pretty interesting one. You know,